Good morning, everyone, and I'll give you my welcome to the Q&A session for Redrow's preliminary results for the year ending June 2020. I do hope that you've all had an opportunity to view the presentation slides we published this morning and listen to what, quite frankly, felt like a rather impersonal narrative from me, Barbara, and Matthew. We are, however, here live and well in sunny Castle Donington, ready to answer your questions. A very short summing up, I think the last few months have clearly been pretty testing for the group. As I said in the presentation, I'm immensely proud of how the whole Redrow team responded to the pandemic and indeed continue to do so. I sincerely believe we have emerged from the crisis a better business with a clear strategy and well prepared for the challenges ahead. A strategy that Matthew set out in his part of the presentation, very much focused on what is our core strength, the Heritage Collection. Really on that note, I'm quite happy now to open up for questions.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask any questions, please would you press star one on your telephone keypad now. The first question we have comes from Chris Millington from Numis. Chris, your line is now open.
Wow. I thought I was going to be at the end of the queue. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Just two from me, please. Firstly, there was no mention really of production efficiency in the statement. I know you updated on that in the trading update, but I just wonder if you could give us a feel as to kind of where you are now and where you would hope that moves later this year, and perhaps give us a bit of a feel as to kind of current build rates. The next one's just really about Help to Buy and the changes and kind of your compliance under the new regime with first-time buyers and obviously the regional price caps. Anything you can say in that regard would be very helpful.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. I think I'm going to hand over to Matthew to deal with the production efficiency and perhaps say a little bit about Help to Buy, and if I've got anything to add to Matthew, I'll come in. Matthew, over to you.
Hi, Chris. Yeah. If we look at the last four weeks, our production efficiency was about 87%. We worked that out. What we're expecting is that to increase. We've got no expectations that it won't hit practically a full output. As subcontractors become more familiar with our processes, we expect that to continue to improve. Now, when we have a program for a home, we never program for any more than one trade to be in a house at any one time anyway. There's no point, there's no real reason why we can't hit that 100%. The only difference is we only allow for one person to be on each floor at any one time. If you've got a gang of two plasterers, they'll have to split up, and one will have to be on the top floor, one will have to be on the bottom floor. We don't have any problem with sort of driving that towards full efficiency. Clearly, from our point of view, we've got quite high WIP levels at the moment. With our sort of strong high WIP levels, it's not as urgent to drive that. We really need to sort of unravel where we are with the WIP and make sure that we convert that into sales. Other things that are sort of affecting that 87% are we have put a lot of time into our snagging at the moment. Clearly, in previous times, you would probably, if you found a scratch store and the customer's moving in, you'd be happy to replace that scratch store after the customer moved in. Now it's really important for us to ensure that we do all works prior to a customer moving in, and we lock the home up for 72 hours before the move-in. We're now insisting that all customers, before we even serve notice, review their own home, have a look around. Any snags that they find or any items that they want repairing, we repair prior to them moving in. There's a little bit of time efficiency required to do that. Clearly, it's really important that we're hitting that. We are currently, since the beginning of the new year, 99% of our homes have been moved into with every single one of the items picked up by the customers have been dealt with and been replaced. That's really a strong sort of message as to where we are. Ultimately, 87%, we don't see any reason why we can't drive that to a higher level.
Matthew, sorry, just on that point there, I presume a lot of the WIP will be cleared out, the excess WIP by the year end. Would you be hoping to be pushing towards that 100 as we approach 2022?
Yeah, definitely. It won't be well before 2022. I don't think we'll have any problem towards that. We're talking months. You know, if not weeks, we're heading towards 100%. So, you know, it's not an issue to us, Chris. We'll start driving that.
Understood.
Help to buy.
And your second question about help to buy and it coming to a close, was that more about?
Well, it's just about the change in its configuration, Matthew, and kind of where your compliance is on the regional price caps and first-time buyers.
Yeah, I mean, we've known for a long time that help to buy is coming to a close. So we've been working on, you know, structure and a method as to how we're going to deal with that as it comes to a close. Clearly, you know, our product as to what it sits at the moment is really attractive to the second-hand market. So we are, you know, aiming for the second-hand market, the wider market. We know the caps are a lot sort of higher in the south than they are the north. So, you know, this is a strong northern issue more than a southern issue. However, we don't seem to think we'll have too much of a problem with that. I mean, the classic example is South Wales for us, where, you know, they've had a lower cap than England for a long time. I mean, they've been at £300,000 as a cap. And, you know, our average selling price in South Wales is £351,000. And our South Wales division is one of our top-selling regions. It's certainly in the top half of selling. So we don't think ultimately it's going to cause us too much of a problem. But we are targeting that second-hand market more than we are anything else. Now, the one thing with us in terms of our products at the moment, Chris, is we're seeing a lot of people, you know, there is an economic shift around the place in terms of who's moving what and how people are working. We're certainly seeing people from, you know, doing less commuting, working more from home. So you can see our products becoming more and more accessible or more required to people who want to work from home. So we are seeing a real pickup in terms of what people are really wanting from their home and as they're spending more and more time. So, you know, the Help to Buy caps, as I said, we've been working on that for a very long time. We know those changes have been coming in. We've been very vocal about the fact that, you know, ultimately we wish they were still there, but, you know, we have to face that they're not, and we've been working on that for a very long time. So, you know, in the long term, we will deal with it, and it won't be an issue.
I think the only thing I'd add to that, Chris, is that we're carrying a very strong order book at the moment, and, you know, despite completions being well ahead in the first 11 weeks. We're still at a record order book level up from where our opening position was as it happens. But that means that we've got some sites where we actually haven't got very much availability at all before the end of March. And I would have to say I'm quite encouraged that we're taking reservations beyond the end of March from people who are non-help to buy buyers. If you want, I've got more concern about the temporary impact of stamp duty coming to an end at the end of March than I have helped buy.
Understood. That's very clear. Thanks so much.
The next question comes from Bikarish Shahi from HSBC. So, Bikarish, please go ahead. Bikarish Shahi from HSBC, please ensure your line is not muted locally. The next question comes from Ami Galla from Citigroup. So, Ami, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just a few questions from me. The first few are quite technical. I was wondering if you could give us, given that you've scaled back your London exposure, I was wondering if you can give us some color on how should we think about overheads in the business over the next 1 to 2 years. The second question was on build cost trends. If you could update us as the sort of trends on material and labor that you're seeing, and in terms of availability of labor, if the sort of capacity is still very much on in line with expectations. And the third question was really on land investments. How do you see the land market today and the sort of scope of land opportunities out there? If we have to assume that you need to accelerate outlet growth beyond 2021 in your business, would you need to step up your land investments going forward? Thank you.
Amy, thank you very much for that. The last question was a lot easier. Now, let me just say I'll get Barbara to deal with the overheads, and then I think Matthew should better pick up the build cost trends, the availability of labour, and lastly pick up perhaps on where we are with land. So, Barbara.
Yeah, okay. Well, the first thing is London itself, and I think it's... I've already said to a couple of people this morning, having done 179 million of turnover in London last year, we said we expected London to bounce back this year, and it will. Still, we've got quite a lot of sites in build, as you know, in London still, that we've got to complete. So the turnover in London this year is expected to be around £300 million. It drops back in 2022 to between £170 and £180 million and stays there certainly for 22 and 23. The regional business will have to step up to replace that London turnover, particularly in 2022. Hence your last question, I guess, which Matthew will go through. In terms of overheads, I think, you know, we have had some redundancies, and they have predominantly been against cost of sales, but some of those will be against overheads, and we have done some cost reduction exercises. So I think in terms of overheads, we will see a reduction in 2021 from 2020. London is an element of that. So we're looking at around close to 90 million of overheads in 2021, and then thereafter going up sort of in line with our normal trajectory of sort of around about 3 to 4 million a year. That's me.
Okay, with regards to build cost trends, as we said in the statement, we did 3.5% to 4% last year. That was all prior to lockdown. I think it's fair to say that we had a strong sales market prior to lockdown, and obviously a strong sales market after lockdown. So we saw about 3.5%, 4%. Most of that was coming from, much of that was coming from groundworks, bricks, roof tiles, lot from materials. Where we haven't seen anything since then, and we don't expect to see anything, certainly in the short period or the short term. Availability of labour, we're not seeing any particular problems with availability of labour. I'm not getting any reports of any issues with any subcontractors. Everybody seems to be working fine, and we've got no issues coming forward with that. I think your last question was regards to the land market. As I said in a statement, we are taking every piece of land on a site-by-site basis. If there's any, obviously, additional margins that we can get out of some of these sites, we are purchasing those. We're also looking at sites with regards to walk-away provisions in case there is something or material change within the market, but that tends to be straight after the pandemic when we were doing those sort of sites. We are seeing a number of opportunities come forward at the moment. We are still certainly in the market. Clearly, you know, with the potential capital gains tax changes, that is making some landowners question as to when they should be selling. So there is opportunities coming forward on that. But ultimately, we are certainly in the market, and we're taking every site on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you.
We now have Will Jones of Redburn. So, Will, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Three as well, if I could, please. The first was perhaps just reflecting on the 2020 margin. There's reference in the presentation to some of the individual factors, obviously, behind the decline, the unproductive labour, sales and marketing recovery, the COVID costs, all understandable. But would it be possible at all to get a quantification of what each of those buckets may have contributed to the margin decline and to what extent they unwind in the current year? The second one was just around if you could update us on your price experience, I suppose, since the market reopened in May, and how that's faring against the sales rate. And then maybe the last one, just, I guess, wrapping up on London. I think there's about 500 plots you mentioned there that obviously dropped out the land bank. Could we just have any indication of how many sites that involves, please, and to what extent there could be a monetization of some of those plots, depending, I guess, on the land status of those sites? Thanks.
Yeah, in terms of the 2020 numbers, clearly we've quantified the impact of London. As far as overheads are concerned, below the line, you know what they are because you can see there the time-related costs. So apart from just over £1 million worth of redundancy, they are ongoing costs. As far as the COVID costs are concerned, I mean, as I say in the note, they're a mixture of prelim costs, you know, build related people costs with no production, project managers, people in the office charged directly to site, like area construction managers, all the sales and marketing costs, because they all go above the line as far as our company is concerned. And so the total of that lot over that 3 month period is between £25 and £30 million on top of the £35 million for London. Now obviously some of that's ongoing, which is why we're guiding towards a gross margin of 20 to 21% in 2021, rising in 2022 and again in 2023. So there is some legacy of that in 2021, and then it diminishes in 2022 and 2023.
Prices? I could probably just quickly pick up on prices, Will. I think what we've seen since we've come back, probably wouldn't be surprised to hear, you know, demand is strong and we've managed to see some price increases. I think we'd just be cautious about what that might mean moving forward, though. My view is, you know, there's quite a lot of pent-up demand at the moment, and we may well see demand drop off a little bit. So it's encouraging where we are with pricing at the moment. But as I say, it's not something that we're baking into the numbers at this stage.
In terms of the London downsizing, we basically got six sites concerned in that, two of which we don't own, one of which is where the really big write-off is, the biggest element of the write-off is, they're ones where we're development partners. The other four we do own. We do expect to recover cash from them. Clearly, that's a commercially sensitive point. So all I can say on that one is that, you know, it's somewhere between zero and around £50 million, but we're not going to quantify it for commercial reasons at this stage. As and when we do dispose of those sites, we'll update you at either an interim or a final stage, but I can say that we are making very good progress on those disposals. We are seeing good interest in those sites.
Great, thanks a lot.
The next question we have comes from Aynsley Lammin from Canaccord. So Aynsley, your line is open.
Right, thanks. Morning all. Just two from me, please. First of all, wondered if you'd give a bit more colour on the mortgage market in terms of loan to values. Are they being a bit more cautious, and is that impacting sales in any way, or would you expect it to do so over the coming weeks? And then secondly, kind of related, I guess, obviously reservations very strong, you know, trading's bounced back nicely. Just trying to understand your mindset in terms of where it sits and how it's changed relative to finishing off units in the order book and actually breaking new ground and, you know, starting new sites. I mean, has it changed dramatically from the recent trends you've seen? Obviously, you're still cautious, but, you know, are you kind of more confident to start new sites than you were a few weeks ago, maybe? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of probably picking up the two questions there, in terms of the mortgage market, we are seeing strong or a really good rates on lower LTVs at 85%. Clearly, our product or our, you know, our heritage collection is very much in the second mover bracket, and so therefore, you know, it's probably less affected by the 95% mortgage area. So we are seeing, you know, strong rates at 85%. We're not seeing so much above that level. So yeah, I mean, the mortgage market, ultimately we would like to see a bit more liquidity coming into the mortgage market and that being pushed along. But I think we're quite comfortable with our product as to where it sits within the mortgage market and the LTVs at the moment. In terms of, what was the next one, reservations, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Reservations are... So, remind me the question, what was that one, Aisley?
Well, just kind of trying to get a bit more of an insight on how your mindset's changed from the trends you have seen. Are you more confident to start new sites?
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
you're
yeah,
very much in the mode of finishing off.
Yeah, I mean, well, we came back initially on the first 3 weeks when we started the back, and we were sort of cautious because we didn't really know what we were going to face. I mean, we'd been closed for some time. But it was very clear after the first few weeks of starting back that there was a strong market out there. So, you know, that gave us the confidence all the way back in that time to start these sites. Now, clearly, as I said, we have purchased a number of sites that are at terms favourable to ourselves. And, yeah, we're not stopping any continuation of any sites or building on them. So, you know, there's no issue from that point of view. I mean, in terms of the customers, we are seeing a big change in sort of what customers want and what they like. you know, our heritage collection really does sell itself with regards to the fact that we've got a lot of space, and therefore it's something that's really desirable at the moment. So, you know, we're looking at the moment into trying putting home offices in, and, you know, so you see the advantage of people who've an economic shift as to how acceptable, and people are really seeing it as something to upgrade to.
Thanks, Frank.
I might just add to that, by the way. I think in terms of reservations, I don't think we should have been surprised that we saw a big tick up when you think that the market was effectively closed for a couple of months. And during that period, you know, there would have been a lot of people looking to buy. And clearly being in lockdown as well, there's many people perhaps looking around them and thinking that they ought to move as well. So I don't think we should be overly surprised by that. I would say that I think the sales rate that we've seen in the first 11 weeks of the year will not be sustainable. I think we will see that drop back, and that's exactly what we're planning on, really. And just, you know, perhaps going back to one point on Matthew about the high loan to value, I think one of the reasons we've made reference to the government just having a look at stamp duty and the end of the holidays, you know, combined with a scarcity of high loan to value, that stamp duty is quite an important contribution to deposits at the moment. So that's why we would just like government to look at how they can make that perhaps a smoother transition to a more normalised market, really.
Right. All very clear. Thank you very much.
We now have a question from Anastasia Solonitsia from UBS. So, Anastasia, your line's open.
Hello. Thank you for taking my questions. They've mostly been answered already, but I've got a small technical one, if I may. So what will be the impact on average selling price as higher priced London sites unwind, and where would you see a normal average price going forward without London? This is the first one. And the second one, I didn't hear quite well, so if you could just repeat what percentage of your completions will not be eligible under HDB phase out from 2021 on, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Well, Anastasia, I think the answer is in the presentation to your first question, in the sense that if you look at slide 11, you'll see that our heritage average selling price is £389,000 and our bespoke average selling price is £376,000. Well, the £376,000, the bespoke, is effectively London apartments. So if anything, you'll actually see a marginal increase in ASP without London. But I think that the overall blended ASP, including social, is not going to change dramatically over the next couple of years. So your private is going to stay at around about the 389 level, which is what we are at the moment. So it's actually quite interesting that now these days the London, because we're in outer London, the London and heritage prices are not that different.
What's the percentage? What is the completion question?
I think before March was the question, wasn't it? What percentage before March?
No, and specifically, was the question, where do we think we'll be before March on completions? I mean,
what percentage of completions will not be eligible from March?
Above the cap.
So the answer is that around about half of our Help to Buy legal completions are above the cap. And they're all in the north, and we have virtually no legal completions south of the Midlands, or from the Midlands south, that are. So it's all in the north. And back to Matthew's point, actually, when you look at part of the reason we're not worried about that is, in fact, our first time buyer percentage has gone up in the last couple of years. It's particularly gone up recently. We're now at around 60% first time buyer, compared to being down at towards 50% of our Help to Buy was first-time buyer if you go back 2 or 3 years ago. So clearly in the south, we're getting more and more first-time buyers by the plot. And if you go to the north, where we are selling with an average selling price above the cap, to be honest with you, the Wales analogy is absolutely spot on. If you look at the locations where we are, Knutsford, Sandbach, Macclesfield, Woodford, you know, we are not worried that we're going to be unable to sell in those locations one iota. Okay.
Clear.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
We now have a question from Gavin Jago of Barclays. So, Gavin, please go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, morning all. Just a couple from me, if I could, please, just around land and planning. There's a reference in this morning's presentation about planning delays. I just wonder if you could elaborate on that a bit more, whether it's kind of resource related or anything to do with just concerns about, you know, the white paper coming through. And then the second one's just on, well, I guess, the outlook for this year on land plots within the owned land bank. Just back to you, Matthew. Do you think you'd be net additions to that number of land plots over this year, given where we're sitting today?
Yeah, okay. Well, I could pick those up. I mean, the planning delays was partly due to COVID. We are seeing, you know, a bit of an issue with regards to that. With, you know, planning committees getting their head around what they were going to do in terms of making sure that everyone had their say. But I mean, planning has always been an issue. You know, we welcome the white paper, and anything that will speed planning up will be a benefit to us. We've got a site at the moment which was an allocated site. It's gone to committee on an outline. It's not one that we own, but it's one we're contracting to at the moment. And, you know, the committee have kicked it out on the basis that it's over development. Now, it was only less than a year ago that they allocated it. So, you know, we still have examples of where planning committees just don't make any sense in terms of what they do. So you end up with planning delays, which are incredibly disappointing for what we do, you know, and you know, they just don't make any sense. So, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating for us as a business to try and plan for a business when we are faced with the planning system. So, you know, but we do welcome the white paper. Anything that will speed up the system will be something that we've got to applaud. So, really, we've got to see what happens with that. But it is early days, and obviously they're out for consultation at the moment. In terms of the plots owned, or land, we are targeting to purchase more, obviously, than we will complete. And yeah, we would expect the land bank to increase by probably 1,200 plots above what we complete. So yeah, we are in a net gain from our land bank.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much.
We now have Andy Murphy of Panmure Gordon. So, Andy, please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got three. First of all, given the changes you were talking about in terms of more working from home and that kind of social change, I was wondering whether your heritage collection is kind of future-proof for that, or whether you're having to consider sort of redesigning the offering to take care of that, and if so, you know, what's the impact on the cost for yourselves? Secondly, interesting to hear you talk about the Wildlife Trust and the targets on nature, rewilding and flourishing legacies. I was just wondering whether you could give us a little bit of colour around what sort of output targets you're thinking about on those three buckets and what the impact on costs are there. And then finally, Barbara, could you just repeat what you said about the gross margin? I didn't write it down quickly enough.
Should I start with the last one?
Yeah,
because it's just repetition, really. So I think we've given guidance that our gross margin for 2021 will be somewhere between 20% to 21%. But we do expect it to increase from there on in. And at the moment, I mean, our best guess, and we'll obviously refine this as we go forward, is 100 basis point increase per annum thereafter. So that's where we are at the moment.
Thank you.
Okay, Andy. Let me talk about the social change. I think the one thing I've always said before I came to CEO is that, you know, we very much focus on the sales rate. What we don't really work out on the average price times by the sales rate. So if you take our average turnover per site, we're probably one of the best selling house builders out there, if not the best selling house builder. You know, and that's partly because of our product. Well, it's fully because of our product. You know, we have a fantastic product that people want to buy. Now, if you look at the social changes as to what's happening at the moment, there's clear huge changes in terms of how people are working. I'm sure everybody sat in your offices now, or even sat at home, has changed the way you work. And even if the pandemic finished tomorrow, I think everyone's adjusted to the way the world works. And in the sense that, you know, you may work more from home, less commuting. So, you know, less commuting tends to give you more money, you know, in terms of disposable income. So, you know, and working from home, you probably need some more space. So you can see how the Heritage Collection fits perfectly into what people are aspiring to, and the fact that they're going to spend a hell of a lot more time at home. You can see how that's, you know, is a big win for them, that the fact that they can spend more time at home with family. Now, we are looking, the great thing about us is that we don't design our, you know, design our houses within an inch of the life to make sure that you can squeeze a double bed into, you know, into each of the rooms. We give space. So what that affords us is the fact that we can redesign internally, you know, as an extra or as a standard, without really adjusting too much in terms of the bedroom sizes, to include for home offices and the like. And I've been on site recently, and I've been speaking to many of our sales team, and, you know, that is really coming forward, that people are wanting home offices. You know, personally, I work from home one day a week, and it's fine sitting on the kitchen table, but when you do 5 days a week, you need to get yourself away. So, you know, ultimately, you can see what's happening with the market, and really you're seeing sort of an economic shift as to where people are. So not only that, you're seeing also people, you know, if they're, instead of doing 5 travels a week, they're doing 1 travel a week, they're prepared to live further away from where their initial base is. So you can see how that will expand across the country. So personally, I think the Heritage Collection sits absolutely spot on for what the country requires at the moment and what people really want. So I have absolutely no problem that we're thinking we've really hit something that will make a big difference to what purchasers require.
Andy, I'll pick up the one on the Wildlife Trust initiative, really. It's probably worth saying that we've been working with the Wildlife Trust now for a couple of years or so. Of course, you know, what you need to put this into context with is that the environmental bill requires a net biodiversity gain on developments, and that's coming through the planning system. So, to be quite frank, you know, we're trying to be proactive with it rather than reactive. We don't want to be dragged to have to do things. We're looking at the best solutions to make sure that we've got net gain. We also think that, you know, picking up perhaps on some of Matthew's points, you know, social change, people are looking to be closer to nature. They're looking to be to have more access to more space. So I think it's part of our strategy to meet what is emerging regulation, really, but to try and use it as alongside, you know, the branding that we've got for the heritage product. In terms of, you mentioned costs, you know, I think, you know, achieving net biodiversity gain does vary quite a lot from site to site. Ironically, it's more difficult to achieve it on a brownfield site than it is on a agricultural site that has been farmed for years and years and years. So it's quite difficult to be specific about the costs, but ultimately, of course, it gets taken into account at the land appraisal stage. So hopefully that gives you the answer you're looking for.
All right. Thank you very much.
We now have Glynis Johnson of Jefferies. So, Glynis, your line is open.
Thank you.
I'm just getting all the page open.
No, I'm going to be easy on you today. Easy on you today. And one very easy one.
Only because I ran you, British.
So the easy one is dividend policy. You talk about returning dividend 2021. Can you remind us or let us know what the policy is going to be? And then secondly, in terms of technology, you talked previously about, you know, the moves you've made in technology, and we can see that can bring particularly strength in terms of quality and being able to track the progress of build. But can you just talk to us about where you think the new advantages come from your technology? Is it about building better? Is it about building faster? Is it about selling more consistently through times of disruption? Or are there other elements that actually make it a big USP for you?
Well, in terms of dividend policy, I can confirm, having had a board meeting yesterday, that our dividend policy remains unchanged at 3x cover. What I would say is, you know, we are keen to reintroduce a dividend as fast as possible, and therefore we may well be in a position to pay an interim dividend given market conditions and given, you know, we'll be cash positive in December. I think it's true to say that the dividend, if we do pay one, the policy may not be fully compliant in 2021. I think the board will look at where the market conditions are come February and what the level of demand has been for the period post the end of the stamp duty holiday and what we're doing in terms of land buying and the land market. So whether it ends up being marginally a higher level of cover for 21 is really a board decision to be made in February. But in terms of the overall long-term policy, the 3x cover hasn't changed, Glynis.
Okay, going on to technology, Glynis, I think we are probably the most advanced house builder out there with regards to technology, and let's face it, you know, it's been making us better and faster, and whatever gets measured gets done, which is clearly what we are all about. Now, in terms of the things that we use, if you look at the guys on site, I've spoken to you guys before about, you know, iPads and the fact that our guys go down the street, they can see the issue, they put it on the iPad and it gives us some data as to the constant issues that we're receiving, which subcontractors aren't performing. So there's huge advantages to that for both our subcontractors and ourselves. You know, not only that, it's socially distanced. You know, they're doing it all by email and they can see that the works that are happening. So there's absolutely massive advantages to us as a business to make sure that that does happen. So, you know, it's given us huge advantages. Now, in terms of our trades can now see what work they have to do before they go on site. Our site managers can understand and control it better. So that's given us a great advantage. Now, in terms of things like snagging, as I said, we do measure everything that we do. And as I said to you, we can give you facts to show that we are 99% now snag-free. Now, the great thing for our customers is that when they come to do a home demonstration, they're given one of our iPads and they can go around the house. They photograph what works need repairing. You know, and that then goes to the subcontractor. The subcontractor then photographs the repair and send it back to us. So you can see how customers are really, really appreciating it. Not only that, when our customer service managers go out and see works that need doing, when the guy turns up in the van a week later to do the repair, he's got photographs of exactly where he's going. The customers gets a bit of confidence that, you know, they aren't there again having to explain what we're doing. So, you know, it's given us huge advantages with regards to, you know, on our customer side, you know, works in terms of our appointment system, our online walkthroughs were all huge advantages to us in the downtime when people could really have a look at what we're doing as a builder. They could walk around the home. So, you know, it is giving us, as I said, it's giving us better information, and it really, you know, everything that is now measured, we can really close those gaps to make sure that we're better than everything that we possibly do.
Does it make you faster?
Yeah, faster and better.
Thank you.
We now have Marcus Cole from Liberum. So, Marcus, please go ahead.
Morning, all. Hope you can hear me. I've got three questions, if I may. First of all, if you talk about the strategy towards the regions, when should we expect the next outlet or division to be open, and when would this be? The second question is, do you envisage outlet openings being easier with the new planning reforms coming through? And then finally, could you give the percentage of the order book that's contracted?
Matthew, do you want to deal with the regional strategy and when we the opportunities for geographical expansion and when that might be?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, with London, with our exit from London, clearly the regions have to pick up on that, the moving down from London. So, you know, our regions are expected to make a double-digit increase in what they're doing in terms of volume. Now, in reality, you know, we expect that we can achieve that without any problem whatsoever. So we aren't too much of an issue with regards to that. So the overall, to get a single digit increase in the business, we need obviously a double within the regions. But having said that, as I said to you before, you know, our new heritage collection is something that's really standing out at the moment, so we don't see any problem with that. In terms of strategy, in terms of regions, we're probably not looking for another region until 2023, probably. We don't really need it within 2023, but we're probably open for 23 for some production in 24. But we will be focusing on the southern area rather than anywhere else. We certainly think there's opportunities around still outside of the M25 and that commuter belt into London as clearly people are exiting from the centre. So really, that's what we see as an opportunity. Outlet openings, I think it's probably a bit early to say as to whether the planning reforms will give us any opportunity for outlet openings. I mean, it's still in consultation, but you know what they're talking about is very positive. And as I said, anything that can help us speed things up would be greatly appreciated.
I'd just add to that, Marcus, I will be very surprised if the white paper goes through in its current form. I suspect there's going to be a lot of resistance on it. I mean, the principle of zoning and removing the burden of getting reserved matters and clearing lots of conditions is very welcome, and it's something we've harped on about for a long, long time. But being the cynic that I am, I suspect it's going to be watered down quite a bit. But anyway, I'll leave Barbara to pick up on the order book.
Yeah, in terms of the order book, just over 65% of the order book, the current order book, is exchanged, contracted, as you would say.
Okay, thank you very much.
We now have a question from Clyde Lewis of Peel Hunt. So, Clyde, please go ahead when you're ready.
Morning all. Three, if I may. One is on, I suppose, weather. You know, with the industry and you guys are sort of obviously going to be building probably a bit more in the balance of this year and probably over the sort of Christmas and New Year period as well, you know, for various different reasons. But how much does that concern you as a business? I mean, you know, if we get a cold snap or a really wet snap, does that cause problems for you guys? That was the first one. The second one was on, I suppose, sort of post-lockdown. How have you seen the sale of sort of extras and sort of, you know, I suppose sort of, you know, top-ups, so sort of extra sort of products that you've been selling before and you've been pushing through quite well, has obviously been quite profitable. And the third one, I suppose, was on government, and you know, obviously the white paper we've sort of touched on already, but how is the government sort of interacting with you and the industry about sort of volumes and sort of output levels? What are they sort of talking to you about at the moment? Thank you.
Right, well, I think Matt is probably the weather forecaster amongst us, so he can probably tell you what the implications might be and where we are on that. And then I think Barbara can probably pick up the sale of extras, and if you like, I'll pick up where we are with government for Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of weather, Clyde, I mean, it's looking quite nice out here in Castle Donington at the moment, the sun's shining, but ultimately, you know, it's... I think we've got a hell of a lot of WIP out in play at the moment. So in terms of, you know, certainly this year, I can't see any issue whatsoever. I mean, to be honest with you, we are working incredibly hard to get as much as we can prior to the March stamp duty threshold date, stamp duty date. So, you know, we are well on, you know, we're inside a hell of a lot of these properties as well. So we won't be seeing any issue with that. We are well organised on site on that basis.
Okay, so in terms of extras, extras are year-on-year marginally down. The predominant reason for that is selling stock plots, Clyde. So if you look at the actual trend of extra sales, it has moved nicely upwards over time as we've had fewer and fewer stock plots and people have had more and more opportunity to buy, you know, inbuilt extras, which are obviously better for us and better for them because then we make more money on them and customers like them, obviously, because they're very difficult to retrofit. So very happy with the situation with extras given the profile of the plot.
And then if I just pick up the last one, which is about, I think, government and particularly, you know, discussions that we might have with government. I would probably have to say that our engagement with government from an industry perspective has not been as strong in recent months as it was leading up to the pandemic. And that is probably to do with the pandemic, social distancing and everything else. So, which is a bit disappointing because I do think that we are at a critical time. And I think, I mean, we welcome the extension to the practical completion date for Help to Buy, but it took a long time for the industry to seem to get the point across to government and the need to do it, and the fact that the impact would was negligible upon them, really. So that was a little bit disappointing. I mean, I'm still sticking with the high volume target, but I go back to, you know, some of the things you said about, I worry about stamp duty, I worry about where the mortgage market is, and I think, you know, government at the moment, I think, are probably looking at sales numbers coming through and thinking that everything's absolutely fantastic. But I think, you know, the job of any business and of government is to think ahead. And they have to look at what's coming over the hill, really. And, you know, there's some things that you could get a little bit concerned about. So I think, you know, government ought to be engaging a bit more with the industry at the moment.
Okay, thanks, guys.
The final question we have from the phone lines comes from Arnold Lemahin from Bank of America. So, Arnold, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Just a couple on my side. Firstly, just a follow-up on the margin outlook. I mean, you sound quite confident that eventually you can go back to 100% productivity or close to 100% on the building site, and you would expect some sort of ramp-up effect, I guess. But let's say on a steady-state basis, once you are back to 100%, what do you think the impact on margins could be? If a project was 22% gross margin in the past, do you think you can also, on a similar project, say at 22, or you think structurally because of the measures on the site, it's going to be a bit lower? That's my first question. My second question, also follow up on net debt and cash flows. Net debt, I think, 126 million at the end of the fiscal year, and you're giving a target to be cash positive, I guess, by June next year. What is the philosophy, I guess, behind, you know, being cash positive? Is it, do you want Redrow to be kind of structurally net cash, or are you just being a little bit cautious in the short term because of all the macro uncertainty? Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, in terms of the margin, we will see margins being slightly lower, and that's why we've given the guidance that we have. We do expect it to continue to improve, but obviously with a smaller business, then we will see those margins being smaller. I mean, obviously, we do get eventually back to 23%, but it takes us some time, and I think that's exactly what will happen, and it's no point of saying we'll do it any faster than we believe is possible, and if we do, then that's great news, and we'll let you know when we think we're going to do it. In terms of going cash positive by the end of June, it's you know, the fundamental reason for that is that our WIP was so high at the end of 2020. So, you know, we will we expect our WIP to be significantly lower at the end of 2021. Our land will actually be higher, as Matthew's already said, and our land creditors will be roughly the same. So the outcome of all of that lot is, and obviously we'll have a reasonable level of creditors. Our creditors will probably be a bit lower because of the lower WIP level. So all that generates you cash. Now, so that's why we go cash positive. Now, thereafter, where do you want to be? Well, you know, we are targeting to ultimately return to a 25% return on capital. So, you know, we don't want to be sat with loads of cash on the balance sheet. But I think until we have a degree of certainty over the marketplace, you know, should we say, knowing what the government's position is and strategy is and policies are, then I think being in a position of a small cash balance is not a bad thing.
Thank you very much.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask any further questions today, please would you press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. We have had no further questions registered at this time, so we'll hand back over to you.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your questions. I hope we've answered them fully for you. And sorry we're having to do this over a conference call, a little bit faceless, but hopefully we all look forward to seeing you in the flesh, so to speak, in the near future. So thanks very much.